A new instant payment platform announced by the Federal Reserve Bank has a lot of folks thinking it's the dawn of a digital dollar. Hi, I'm Rob West. It's called FedNow, and it will allow businesses and even individuals of participating banks to send and receive instant payments 24/7. But is it the camel's nose in the tent for a digital dollar? I'll talk about it today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial future. Okay, before we get into this discussion of digital currency, I think it's important to remember Proverbs 15:14. It reads, "The heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge, but the mouths of fools feed on folly." My point is, let's not panic about a digital currency that isn't here yet and would have to meet with approval by what is now an often hopelessly divided Congress. The Constitution gives Congress sole power over the currency of the United States. The Federal Reserve has no authority to create currency, digital or otherwise, on its own. Now, what exactly would a digital dollar look like? Obviously, it would be an electronic form of the U.S. dollar. It would be fiat money, as is the current dollar, meaning it's not backed by gold or silver. It would be similar to cryptocurrencies, but with one big difference. It would be regulated and backed by the Federal Reserve. And that's the major concern of many opponents of a digital currency. It would potentially give the Fed unprecedented power over our financial system. Theoretically, all transactions could be monitored unless strict limits are placed on the Fed's ability to snoop and share that information with other agencies. Also, again in theory, the Fed could use this power to actually shape society by allowing or restricting certain transactions. So fears of a digital currency are not without some foundation. However, since other countries are moving ahead with digital currencies, some at a rapid pace, it's likely that the U.S. will have a digital dollar someday. When that might happen is anyone's guess, and it could be years away. You can expect a lot of debate in the House and the Senate before a digital currency is ever approved by those bodies. And you'll have a say in it, too, by contacting your elected representatives and ultimately in the voting booth. So again, let's not panic. Now, it's true that last year the Biden administration charged executive agencies to explore the process of implementing a digital currency, and the Fed is cooperating in that effort. But the central bank is also warning that there are risks with a digital dollar that could leave customers vulnerable to theft and fraud. Specifically, policymakers and the Fed have listed several requirements for a digital dollar that won't be easy to meet. It must provide benefits to U.S. households, businesses, and the overall economy that exceed its costs and risks. It must also yield those benefits more effectively than our current currency. It should complement, not replace, other forms of money. And it must protect consumer privacy and prevent criminal activity. So at least at this point, the Fed is not exactly a cheerleader for a digital dollar. That should be welcoming news to people who fear the Fed is conspiring to take away their privacy and freedom, but it hasn't stopped opponents of digital currency from calling the FedNow platform the camel's nose in the tent, which means once the nose is in, the whole camel is going to be in there soon. Concerns about FedNow, set to launch in July, have spread like wildfire on social media. One example is a tweet by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is a presidential candidate for 2024. He claimed that FedNow itself is a central bank digital currency that will allow the Fed to monitor and restrict people's financial transactions. Kennedy wrote, quoting now, "The Fed just announced it will introduce its FedNow central bank digital currency in July. CBDCs grease the slippery slope to financial slavery and political tyranny," unquote. Another Instagram poster wrote, quote, "Better get your money out of banks. CBDC has started," meaning you will wake up one morning and all your U.S. paper dollars will be converted into U.S. digital dollars, end quote. Of course, the Fed flatly denies this. Testifying before Congress this month, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell said, quoting again, "We'll have real-time payments in this country very, very soon," unquote. But he also told lawmakers the Fed is nowhere close to having a digital dollar. So those are the facts about Fed now and a future digital dollar as we have them today. We hope they clear up some of your questions. All right, your calls are next, 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Back with much more just around the corner.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Coming up in the next few weeks, a popular time in West Michigan. It's the Tulip Time Festival. This festival in Holland, Michigan, boasts over 5 million tulips in a variety of colors, all in full bloom. It takes months of preparation, as well as some favorable weather conditions. If it's too cold this late in the year, the tulips won't be ready to bloom. In God's perfect plan, the arrival of Jesus on earth took not months, but years. Paul tells us in Galatians 4:4-5, when the time had fully come, God sent his Son to redeem those under the law. God used the conditions of the world, even the rule of the Roman Empire, to bring salvation in Christ. You'll see Jesus more clearly through time in God's Word. Visit getanchor.com.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience, and she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations, such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches, and we're grateful for their sponsorship of the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Well, happy Friday to you. I'm Rob West. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Time to turn the corner to whatever you're thinking about financially today. We'd love to tackle your questions and run them through the lens of biblical principles and wisdom. You know, God's Word is, of course, the source for all that we do, and that includes our role as stewards of God's money. And so we want to pull out the big ideas, the themes in Scripture, those things that are on the heart of God as it relates to our role as managing His money, and apply them to the practical decisions and choices you're making every day. So let's do that together. We've got some lines open. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. Again, 800-525-7000. We're going to begin today in New Jersey with John. Go ahead, sir.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Long story short, a few years ago, my parents have passed, and I bought the house off my other siblings for about $60,000.
Okay.
Well, as a single father, it's hard to keep up on two properties. I also had another property at the time.
Okay.
So I recently has sold the property for $150,000. And right. I'm looking for suggestions on how to invest that money, or would it be smart to buy some land that border my other property that I'm very interested in?
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
With that money, or get a mortgage?
Sure. Okay. Well, that's helpful background, John. Let me ask you just a few other questions. What is your age?
45.
All right. And you said you're a single dad. You're working and plan to continue to work for, the next 20 years or so. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And talk to me about the retirement assets that you're accumulating. Are you currently saving for retirement? And if so, in what vehicle?
We have a 401, and I also save my own.
Okay. What percent of your income would you say, considering all of the contributions you're making, whether that's through the company-sponsored 401k, but also including any direct investments you're doing on your own, what percent of your income roughly would you say you're putting away toward retirement?
Okay, so on my own, I'm not exactly sure what's going in my 401k, but on my own, I save $200 a week and don't touch it.
Okay, and is that going into an IRA or something else?
No, that's going in just a savings account.
All right. How much do you have in liquid savings right now?
About $15,000.
Okay. And what would you say your total monthly expenses are?
Very little. I'm debt free.
Okay. So maybe $2,000 or $3,000 a month?
Way less than that.
Okay.
Probably $1,000.
Okay. Are your kids still at home?
One is in the service and one is a senior.
Okay. All right. Well, I understand you're debt free and that's great, but $1,000 a month sounds low. Let's say it's even $2,000. I mean, that $15,000 gives you plenty of emergency reserves. So I think that's great. We'd recommend 3 to 6 months. So even if it was $2,000, that's only $12,000 to have 6 months worth of expenses. So I would consider that fully funded or even overfunded for the emergency fund portion of what you need in your financial life. I do think it's worthwhile for you to explore how much is going into that 401k, because I'd love for you to get that up to 10 to 15% of your pay. And that may mean that, they need to increase that a bit. And if you are on board with that, obviously because your savings is fully funded, I'd probably rather that $200 a month or a week go into additional retirement savings so that we take advantage of the next 20 years for you to grow in a tax-deferred environment, the investments that you have for the long term so they can be compounding without the taxes putting a drag on them. And, because you've got quite a bit already in savings, I would redirect that into an account that's going to be a little bit more tax efficient. What do you have in your 401k today, roughly? Do you know?
I do not know that.
Okay. So that would be another next step, is to look at not only what percentage am I putting in, but how much do I have in total? And am I on track for what I'll ultimately need in retirement? I mean, given that you're living modestly, and I suspect that would continue, because if you continue to live debt-free, you're not going to need a whole lot, and you've got 20 years to continue to build assets. But let's say you're on track, and I would recommend you do some planning with an advisor just to verify that. But let's say through the current salary deferral and your modest lifestyle with what you're putting away, plus your fully funded emergency fund, let's say you're on track for retirement to be able to, offset whatever, income needs you have in addition to Social Security, if any, when that season of life comes. So now we're sitting here with a real opportunity to say, okay, we've got $150,000 in proceeds from this home sale. You're not necessarily looking to redeploy that into another rental property or investment property of some kind, although that is an option. So the two options you're exploring are buy some land adjacent to your property. And is that for investment purposes, or do you want to build on it, or just because you want to expand your property line? What's the purpose of that?
Well, there is a camp on it with a well, sewer, electric, and 70 acres of hunting land. And me and the children, we hunt. We love hunting.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, if you're planning to do that anyway, and you feel like that fits in your financial life, and given how modest you're living and all the other saving that you're doing, I would say don't take on a mortgage right now, especially with interest rates where they are. You know, if that's something that fits with your plan, and you said you all would be able to enjoy it, plus obviously it's an asset that you could sell down the road if at some point you didn't want all this land, I would say go ahead and take that $150,000 and use that to buy the land. And then if you have any left, I would look at, you know, investing that, especially while the stock market is down. But again, I would really focus in on making sure you have enough going into that 401k so that you're on track to save what you ultimately need. And then using the proceeds of this home sale to continue to live debt-free and keep your lifestyle as modest as possible makes a lot of sense to me.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We appreciate your call, John. You sound like a great dad. You're making a lot of great choices here, and all the best to you, my friend. We appreciate your call today. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We've got some lines open today for your financial questions. Lucille will be coming your way just after the break. Unfortunately, I don't have enough time to thoroughly answer your question, so if you stay right there, we will get to you. Let me tackle a quick email. These come into us every day at askrob@faithfi.com. This one comes from Mr. Miller, a listener. He writes, if I have $20,000 in a traditional IRA and I take out twice as much as my required minimum distribution, do I still have to withdraw the RMD next year too? And I would say, unfortunately, Mr. Miller, if you take more than necessary for your RMD in a given year, the excess cannot be carried forward and counted toward an RMD in a future year. So I would say if you don't need the money, just limit it to what your actual RMD is this year, and then you can take more next year. Also, for those of you who have IRAs and you're subject to required minimum distributions, check out the qualified charitable distribution, which will allow you to satisfy that RMD and get the money to a charity or your church of your choice and not recognize it as taxable income. It's a great strategy. Back with much more after this on Faith and Finance. Stay with us.
God made His design for marriage absolutely clear. July 6th through the 8th at the Cadence Bank Arena and Conference Center in Tupelo, Mississippi, it's the Marriage Family Life Conference 2023. Strengthen your marriage and your family with Abraham Hamilton III, Dr. Kathy Cook, Miki Addison, and many more. The Youth Apologetics track is back as well. The Marriage Family Life Conference 2023, for His glory alone. Register today at marriagefamilylife.net.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
Too busy to catch your favorite shows on the radio? Have no fear, because the AFR app is here. Download the app to have access to live broadcast, music streaming, as well as each podcast. Whether you're at work, at home, or on the go, it's easy to listen to AFR.
The AFR app is available not only for Apple and Android users, but also on Amazon Alexa and Roku.
Download the AFR app today at AFR.net.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Director of the AFA Foundation, Riley Wildman.
Here in the Foundation, we help families just like yours to shore up permanent income for their retirement years through our charitable gift annuities.
Riley has served as the director of the AFA Foundation for over a decade.
Give us a call today at 800-326-4543. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
The AFA Foundation, the Financial Stewardship Division of the American Family Association.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Hey, we're so glad to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Everything we do here at AFR starts with a biblical worldview, and then we apply that to every facet of your lives, your role as a citizen of this country, your parenting, your walk with Jesus, and yes, your money management, your management of God's resources as a steward. We gather together each morning to apply biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. So what are you thinking about today financially? Let's talk about it. We've got some lines open. We'd love to hear from you at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Let's head to North Carolina. Lucille, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I decided to take your advice and do my giving while I'm living,
so okay.
I'm knowing where it's going.
I love it.
And I have some properties that I wanted to leave to my daughters, and one is a vacant land, a lot that's adjacent to my house. Well, we have a granddaughter who would like to buy a house right now, but the housing market is so high she can't afford it to buy what she needs. So I was thinking that I would give the lot to my granddaughter, to my daughter, who in turn wants to gift it to her daughter, and she would be able to build now what she can afford. My question is, would it be better to give it directly to my granddaughter, so that she can get a construction loan and build a house on it? Also, if she needs some assistance, my daughter would say she would be willing to co-sign so that she can get a larger home. Or would it be better to give it to my daughter and they would put it in both their names?
Yeah, interesting. A couple of thoughts here. First of all, I appreciate your desire to be a blessing to your family, including your daughter and your granddaughter. You need to be aware of the tax implications of this. You can absolutely make a gift to your daughter or your granddaughter if it's over the annual exclusion, the exclusion for annual gifting of $17,000. Then you would just need to file a gift tax form with the IRS. There's not going to be any tax on it beyond $17,000. It would just go against your lifetime gift exemption of over $12 million. So as long as you don't plan to get to $12 million, you should be fine. And you won't ever incur any tax. You would just need to let the IRS know that you did it so that they could add it to that lifetime exemption. The tax implications are such, though, that when you gift this to them prior to your death, so if it doesn't come to them as an inheritance through the probate process because you left it in your will, or through a trust and by putting the land in a trust, and then at your death it passes to either your daughter or your granddaughter or both, if you just give it to them outright, your cost basis for this land is going to pass with it. So whatever you originally purchased it at is the cost basis. So when it's sold, that's going to be the cost basis to determine how much profit there was. And then that profit is going to be taxable as a capital gain. However, if you were to leave it to them in a trust or through your will and they inherit it at your death, that cost basis steps up to the date of death, the market value as of the date of death. So if they were to turn around and sell it, right after they inherited it, they would have no tax because they got the stepped up cost basis. Now, that may not be as much of an issue for you because you are not necessarily just looking to pass this as an inheritance. You want your granddaughter to be able to use it right now. And in order to do that, you want it to be in her name. And so you may decide, you know, that them paying the capital gains at some point down the road, a long time from now when they sell it, it's not worth you waiting to pass it as an inheritance in order for that tax-favored treatment of the stepped-up basis. You may rather just go ahead and gift it to her now. Does that all make sense to you?
I think so, okay. Because I had a kind of a question with the similar situation. An attorney was telling me that if I give it to them now, there might be a tax implications, but giving it to them upon my death would not, because you have to have so much before you pay inheritance tax.
Yeah, wouldn't have to worry about that unless you had a massive estate. There's not any inheritance tax,
no.
And estate taxes don't kick in until $12 million. So you're fine there. So really the only tax consideration is, again, if you gift it to either of them, they're going to inherit your original cost basis. So once they sell it someday, they're going to have to determine the profit based on what you originally paid for it. Whereas if you were to pass it to them as an inheritance, they enjoy that stepped up cost basis. So it jumps up to the value of the property as of the date of your death, which means if they turn around and sell it right away, they wouldn't have any capital gains. So that's one consideration. Now, in terms of how to do this, I mean, if ultimately you want this in the name of your granddaughter because she's the one you're giving it to, she's the one who's going to build on it and own it, I would just gift it to her. And then she's going to have to qualify for that mortgage on her own based on her own credit score, her own income. I understand your daughter's willing to co-sign. I would actually encourage her not to do that. The Bible is very clear about not co-signing because when we do that, it changes the relationship. And, you know, now it's a borrower, you know, servant kind of relationship. And let's say, despite your granddaughter's best intention, she's unable to pay the mortgage because, you know, her mom went in with her and allowed her to borrow more than she really should be able to on her own income. And now her mom's having to step in and cover the payments so it doesn't get foreclosed on. And that just creates all kinds of problems. So I would much prefer you gift it directly to your granddaughter, let her qualify for what mortgage she can actually afford based on her income and other debts, and let her do that on her own. And if her mom wants to help, maybe she makes a gift to help her, you know, with the down payment or something, as opposed to being on the note with her. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I hope that helps you, Lucille. If you have other questions, maybe you ought to reach out to an estate planning attorney or a real estate attorney, somebody who can help you think through all of this. But you clearly have a generous heart and you're a wonderful grandmother. I know that. So we appreciate you being on the program today. May the Lord bless you. Folks, a quick break and back with more of your questions. 800-525-7000. Stay with us.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Jenna Ellis in the morning.
You need to be very concerned about what your children are being exposed to if they go to a public school or even if they go to a Christian school. Parents are not just allowed, they have a constitutionally protected fundamental right that is God-given to direct the education, well-being, and faith options of their children.
Jenna Ellis in the morning, weekdays at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program.
For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
When we follow Jesus, the things of this world grow strangely dim. We focus less on ourselves and more on God's kingdom. In Michael Blue's book, Free to Follow, we're reminded to surrender everything to Jesus and follow Him. Free to Follow explores what the Bible says about money and possessions and challenges you to rethink the way you view and use them. Request a copy of Free to Follow with your gift of any amount to faithfi.com/follow.
What does the American Family Association stand for? AFA believes that all men and women, whether in private or public, should be free to exercise their faith without hindrance from the government. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Coming up in our final segment of the broadcast, Jerry Boyer will stop by. He joins us each Friday with his insightful analysis on the markets and the economy. We'll look forward to hearing Jerry's commentary in just a bit. But first, back to the phones. A few lines open, 800-525-7000. Let's go to Ohio. Andrew, you're next on the program, sir. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi.
I had a question about, I got an opportunity to purchase a investment property for a good price. And I was wondering, like, I got three different options. Obviously, I could go through the bank and finance it. I was thinking of paying half cash and half of a 401k loan that I have. And then I could just pay all cash. And I was seeing what your thoughts were on my decision making on that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to weigh in on that. What is the value of the property you're looking to buy?
$45,000.
All right. So is it just land or does it have a dwelling on it?
It has a dwelling. It has a house. It's a little rental property, a 2-bedroom, 1-bath.
Okay.
It is rented right now. And that is not the purchase price. That's the property value.
Okay. So what would be the purchase price of the property?
The purchase price is $22,500.
Okay. I'm not following you. So you're buying a piece of land with a home on it, and what is the asking price for the whole thing?
$22,500.
Okay. What was the $45,000?
That's the property value. That's what it's appraised for.
Okay, so they're selling it 22. They're selling it at 50% discount.
Pretty much, yes. It's a lady. I've taken care of the property in the yard for years now, and she's just wanting to get out of it. And she offered it to me at that price.
Okay, is she aware that it's worth $45,000?
Yes, she is.
Okay, and so she's essentially making a gift.
Pretty much, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, let's say that's the case. It's worth 45. She's selling it to you at 50% on the dollar or 50 cents on the dollar. She's in full knowledge that she's giving you 50% off on it. The question is, should you, what do you have available in cash that you could use to buy this?
I have the full $22,500
okay.
cash.
What would you have left over in savings after you did that if you paid cash?
I would have $10,000 left over.
All right. And what do you spend on a monthly basis, roughly?
What would I spend for that property? Or?
No, no. What are your monthly expenses running?
Oh. Well, as far as, like, household bills.
Yeah, all of it. You're spending $3,000 a month, $5,000 a month. What are you spending on per month in bills?
Probably $3,000 to $4,000, $3,500.
All right, so let's say you've got 2 to 3 months' expenses put away, or you would have in what I call an emergency fund, you know, after you bought this. That's good. I'd love for you to continue to build that up. Now, are you saving for the long term for retirement in some sort of 401k or something?
Yes, I do have a 401k.
All right, what percent of your income are you putting toward that each month, do you know?
7%.
Okay, that's great. And how much have you built up in that so far?
There's 49,000 in there.
Okay. All right. And what is your age?
40.
Okay. Yeah, so you got time on your side. You got, I mean, let's say 25 years, Andrew. I would probably try to bump that up to 10 to 15% of your income as opposed to 7, although 7's a great start. So you could continue to grow in that. I wouldn't be borrowing from that 401k to do this. I'd just pay it out of cash. I'd limit your lifestyle. Hopefully you have some surplus every month, a little bit left over. I'd continue to fund that emergency fund until you had a full 3 to 6 months' expenses in there as liquid savings for the unexpected. And then I'd try to bump up that 401k, but I wouldn't borrow from it. By borrowing from it, you're going to be taking the money out, which means it can't recover with the market once this market recovers. Now, we're probably going to retest our October 2022 lows as we get into the recession, at least historically speaking. That's what we would expect would happen, but that's okay. You've got 25 years for this money to grow. And so, you know, we want that money in there so it can recover with the market, even though we're up 7 or 8% this year on the S&P 500, you know, stocks are still down. And so you want to continue to invest in that, and you want that money to continue to grow over time. So I wouldn't be pulling it out. I'd buy this with cash. And then, you know, hopefully you can convert it to an income stream that would just supplement your income.
Okay.
All right.
Very
good. Thanks, we appreciate your call today. Yes, sir. Thanks for calling. Let's head to Indiana. Hi, William. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, sir. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about a farmland that we'll be inheriting one day, hopefully not soon. Will my brother and I have to pay an inheritance tax on that?
No, you don't pay inheritance taxes. The estate giving the assets pays them. But no taxes would be due based on the current IRS rules and regs unless your father's estate exceeds the lifetime exclusion of $12.92 million. So there wouldn't be any estate tax, and there are no inheritance taxes, so you would be fine there. Now, I see in my notes here, it sounds like you're already on the deed to at least one of these properties. Is that right?
Yes, the 80-acre farm. My brother and I are already on that.
So that one you wouldn't be inheriting it. You already own it. But anything you receive that you don't currently own and you receive it as an inheritance, there's no taxes on that for you, and your father's estate wouldn't have any taxes until it gets up nearly $13
million. Okay, I have one other quick question. I'll hold you on the line long. I'm contemplating retiring at 62. I'm 59 and a half. I probably got $200,000 in my works IRA plan, and another couple $100,000 in the work prior to where I worked before. And it has lost some money. It's coming back. But I'd like to find out how much money I would get from Social Security at full age 67 compared to 62.
Yeah. You're going to take about a 30% reduction if you take it at 62 versus your full retirement age. So that's a pretty significant amount that you'll be locking in there. Now, if you, you know, if you really need to retire or just want to retire and you're comfortable locking that reduction in, then obviously it could serve a valuable role in covering your expenses, allowing you to retire. But if at all possible, you know, that's going to increase by 8% a year from, you know, from 62 all the way to full retirement age. And that's a permanent you know, increase by you waiting. So, you know, I would try to put that off as long as you can.
So where would I find out what I would get a month at 67 and then do the math on the 30% and or add on a year, you say 8% more per year?
Yeah, exactly. You're just going to want to log into the Social Security's website at ssa.gov, and you can get your benefits statement there online. And all the information you're looking for.
And am I correct in assuming I'm going to draw more, a person draws more if you're like, make $100,000 a year compared to 50?
Or? Absolutely. Yeah, it's based on your highest 30 quarters of earnings is what determines that. So the more money you make, the more money you will ultimately receive. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Today's Issues, offering understanding and encouragement.
To those of you who may be worried, let me remind you that our God reigns.
AFA President Tim Wildman is joined by a host of godly voices to help make sense of the news of the day.
Once they take the word experimental off of it, I might feel better about it.
Right. It's only a few outlets like you at American Family Radio that are bothering to report it.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Target still doesn't get it. Their policy allowing men identifying as women to use the changing rooms and restrooms right alongside real women and girls is dangerous. At least 5 incidents of men photographing and filming women undressing have made the news. How many more haven't? If you've signed the pledge to boycott Target, please stand firm. If you haven't signed it, take a stand and sign it today. Visit afa.net/target. afa.net/target.
45,000. That's how many times FaithFi referred a listener to a certified Kingdom advisor last year. And for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking on the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. In just a moment, we'll head back to the phones to take more of your calls and questions. But first, here on a Friday, Jerry Boyer stops by each Friday to share his insightful analysis on the markets and the economy. And we always enjoy having Jerry with us. Jerry, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, let's start with the economy, and then I want you to give us a quick update on some of what you're working on in the corporate engagement world. What do you make of just kind of where we find ourselves today? I was reading this morning, Goldman Sachs is a little more optimistic than most economists, saying they put the probability of a recession down at only 35%. I think most folks think it's probably more like 65 or 75%, making it the base case. What's your analysis at this point?
That sounds a little low to me, 35%. The blue chip consensus, it kind of is hovering around zero. So sometimes a little under zero and sometimes a little over zero. I think that markets have basically been signaling a shallow recession. Of course, we could get what they call a growth recession, which is it's not a negative number, but it's a near zero number. I think we obsess a little bit over the word recession in the sense that let's say that the growth rate is 0.1 or the growth rate is negative 0.1.
Right.
The difference between those numbers is so small, you won't feel it. You know, yeah. You won't say, oh, like when we go from negative 0.1 to 0.1, people won't say, whoo, I'm right. glad that's over. So, but something about that, just passing that zero line where that allows you to use the dictionary definition to call it a recession. And right. I think that's because it becomes political. No yes. president wants a recession on their watch, and no Fed chairman wants a recession on his watch. So I don't know whether we get one of these growth recessions or actual technical recessions. I think the markets are saying, you know, that we actually get a technical but shallow recession. I know there's a lot of fear out there. The banking thing could go crazy and could collapse the global economy. I would say the Christian conversation about finance tends to be more dominated by fear than the data generally support. And I think that's because we sense that we're a culture in decline, that we're a culture that has lost its biblical moorings. So we kind of expect judgment. But yeah. just have to understand that judgment can take a long time, and judgment doesn't necessarily have to be financial. So this week, markets went a little bit towards the optimism range. Why? Well, because unemployment went up, and so that's the crazy, you know, bad news is good news thing.
Right.
The unemployment rate. I'm sorry, the jobless claims. So that's another sign that the job market, you know, this week maybe wasn't so great, which means the Fed will probably cut. Probably the next move from the Fed will be a cut, and futures markets shifted in that direction, which means inflation indicators went up a little bit. So it's the classic dove move. And so we saw markets that were mixed. Those that are most interest rate sensitive, you know, like bonds and like growth stocks, you know, like tech, they went up. The others went down a little bit. So it's pretty much the same playbook, which is every week we have to ask, what is Big Brother Fed going to do? Because it's the biggest investor in the world. And this week, because inflation was a little lower than expected, and because unemployment claims were a little higher than expected, that basically signaled, the Fed's a little bit more likely to cut, and that will make the recession a little less severe. But it means that they're done fighting inflation, even though inflation isn't done being high. And we might be done with inflation, but inflation isn't done with us. So the numbers this week were not they're lower. The inflation numbers are lower than the 10% year-over-year growth from a year ago, but they're still higher year-over-year, still much higher than average. We're way above targets, and we shouldn't have 4% inflation. That's too high. That destroys wealth. It's anti-biblical. It's unjust weights and measures. But it looks like the Fed is saying, yeah, this is good enough. You know, we're done because we don't want to trigger one of those real recessions.
Great synopsis, Jerry. Give us an update on what you've been working on in the corporate engagement world. I know it's been a busy season for you.
It has. I think the really big item is next week there is a proposal, it's on Tuesday, on the ballot for JP Morgan Chase, which is the largest bank in America. This is put forward by a Christian financial advisor named David Bonson. It's supported by Alliance Defending Freedom. They tried to block it, but the SEC said, no, you can't block it. You have to have this conversation. They said it's ordinary business. But of course, it's not ordinary business when you are debanking, say, a religious freedom organization started by a well-respected, former ambassador, senator, congressman, Sam Brownback. What's interesting about this isn't just the proposal. A group of a dozen state treasurers sent a letter to J.P. Morgan saying, we want you to take this seriously. We want you to investigate. This seems to be a pattern here. And then I think 19 attorneys general also wrote to this bank saying, we're really troubled by what seems to be a pattern of cancellation of conservatives. So this isn't just, some lone person. This has got serious state level officials who could affect the business. Shockingly, but disappointingly, ISS, the proxy service, is saying, we're recommending a no vote on this because they already disclose enough. Well, I've read their statement. All they say is, we don't have a policy of debanking people based on religion or politics. Guess what? No company would have a policy like that.
Right.
That's not the issue. The issue is always, do you have vague language like, we don't allow anything hateful, or we don't allow anything harmful, or we don't allow anything insensitive, on our website or among our clients. And then those vague words get interpreted by people for whom Black Lives Matter Foundation seems perfectly fine, even if they're siding with Hamas. But, you know, a Kansas senator saying we want religious freedom sounds like hate. So when they have subjective standards and they're enforced by people for whom Christianity sounds like hate, and let's face it, corporate cultures, frequently the people who are the gatekeepers, simple affirmations of Christianity sound like hate, even though there's nothing hateful about them whatsoever. It's just an affirmation of religious liberty. That's it. That's all that Sam Brownback was doing. But just the affirmation of religious liberty is used as a cudgel to accuse people of hate, and then they get debanked. So the vote is Tuesday. It will almost certainly lose. They almost always do, the shareholder proposals. But the debate is on, and they're not going to be able to just ignore this and wave it away.
Wow, fascinating. And I think this just underscores the real need and opportunity that exists by shareholders showing up and being present in these conversations, right?
Yeah, and if someone's a shareholder, listen, you got a little thing in the email, you got a little email or something, there's a little thing called a control number on your paper or on your email ballot. You pop that control, you go to the website. You might have to do a little looking. I'm sorry, they don't make it easy. They're not trying to make it easy. So you go to the website where they're holding it, and you pop in that control number, and there's a little box that'll come up where you can ask a question. Ask a question. Speak up. I am weary of conservatives and Christians complaining about from a safe distance or going on Fox News to denounce them. You can't change people that you talk about but don't talk to. Show up on Tuesday and talk to them. That's the only thing that can really be redemptive. That's a redemptive approach as opposed to a complaining approach, because complaining is just another form of worry, and it doesn't add one cubit to your lifespan, and it doesn't change the culture.
Well said, Jerry. Hey, I want to get you to weigh in on one other topic before we let you go today. Supreme Court is weighing the Biden's student loan forgiveness program. In the wake of that, this year's incoming freshman class is expected to borrow as much as $37,000 on average to cover the cost of college. Just what do you make of where we find ourselves in this nation with the cost of college and just the proposals that are on the table and how we look at those through a biblical lens?
Well, the more subsidies you give for colleges, the higher the cost goes up. It doesn't cut costs. It just increases the bloat in college administration. So they just have more money flowing in, and people feel like they're getting a bargain, so they go to college. First, big point here. Don't just automatically send your kids to college, or if you're the kid, don't automatically go to college. Make an informed financial decision. We got the idea that if you're middle class, that means that you can't work with your hands. If you're middle class, you can't be a welder. You can't be an electrician. You can't be a plumber. You can't work in a factory. You have to go to college. That's the message that got sent out. And what that did is sent a lot of people to college to get for majors where it didn't help their earnings. And they frequently, if they're going to non-Christian colleges, they're getting indoctrinated by Marxism and atheism. And with some Christian colleges, they might be getting some of that stuff as well. So practical, college is for certain people, it's not for everyone. And I don't mean college is for smart people. I mean college is for people who want to go into professions that require college. And other people too, if they can afford it. On the big picture here, the forgiveness of debts is a biblical theme. But always in the Bible, forgiveness of debts is the holder of the debt forgives the person who borrowed. So if you owe me money, Rob, I don't think you do, but if you owe me money, biblical forgiveness is I forgive your debt. It's not a politician forgives your debt with somebody else's money. That appears in the Bible negatively in the story of the unfaithful steward.
Yeah, well said, Jerry, and I think that really puts a fine point on it and allows us to see what's actually going on here. Really appreciate your insights on all of these topics, my friend. You help us think well because you think through a biblical lens, and that's where we need to start. Grateful for you.
And for you. God bless.
All right. Have a great weekend. That's Jerry Boyer, president of Boyer Research. He's our resident economist, joins us each Friday with his insightful analysis on the economy and whatever else I decide to throw at him. We're grateful for his time. That's going to do it for us today, folks. Have a great weekend. Grateful for my team, Pat Montague, Devin Patrick, and Jim Henry. I couldn't do it without them. I hope you enjoy church on Sunday and then come back and join us on Monday. We'll do it all over again, Lord willing. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.